Today in New York City, General David Sarnoff, former chairman of the board of RCA, died after a long illness. He was 80 years old. General Sarnoff was one of the pioneers of the electronic communications industry. Largely through his efforts, radio and television became a part of the American household. General Sarnoff organized the National Broadcasting Company in 1926. He headed its parent corporation, RCA, for more than three decades. Sarnoff was born in a small Russian village and came to this country as a boy in 1900. When his father died soon afterward, he went to work selling newspapers and as a delivery boy. When he was 15, he had a job with the commercial cable company as a messenger and saved enough money to buy a telegraph instrument. He learned Morse code and went to the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Instrument Company as a clerk for $5.50 a week. A memo Sarnoff wrote to his superior at Marconi proposing a radio music box led to the development of home radio and ultimately to the broadcasting industry. As early as 1923, Sarnoff predicted home television. Sarnoff served as an Army officer in communications, and during the Second World War, he was special consultant to General Dwight D. Eisenhower's headquarters in Europe. He was promoted to Brigadier General in 1944. General Sarnoff is survived by his wife, Lizette, and three sons: Robert W. Sarnoff, chairman of the board of RCA; Edward Sarnoff of New York, chairman of the board of Fleet Services Incorporated; and Thomas W. Sarnoff of Beverly Hills, California, staff executive vice president, West Coast of NBC. He also leaves two brothers, Morris Sarnoff of Hollywood and Lou Sarnoff of New York, a sister, Mrs. Herbert Bear of Beverly Hills, and nine grandchildren. The funeral will be Wednesday morning here in New York City. We present now a tribute to David Sarnoff, narrated by Ben Grauer, the veteran NBC reporter and commentator who was associated with Mr. Sarnoff for more than 30 years.
David Sarnoff was an extraordinary man who was unique among the extraordinary. Rarely in history has mankind so greatly benefited from the accomplishments of a single man. Electronic communications was his field. He felt that every person should have the chance to be informed and entertained, to know of the world beyond the hometown, the farm, the ghetto. And he had an abiding faith that greater communication among the peoples of the world would improve the chance for understanding and peace. David Sarnoff was born in Russia, February 1891, in one of the backward hamlets ordained by the Tsar as fitting for Jews. Life there meant poverty, hunger, and isolation. The only hope was to leave. And so the family, father, mother, and three boys, came to the United States. David was nine, and life in the Lower East Side of Manhattan was tough and hardly inspiring. He grew up in a hurry, working at several jobs to help support the family. In 1906, delivering messages for a telegraph company, he decided to learn code. He studied books on electricity. A few months later, he was hired by the American Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company, soon was operating and repairing equipment, and even talking with the great Marconi, the inventor of wireless. David was 15. It took a tragedy 6 years later, in April 1912, to focus public attention on the powerful use of wireless communication. And David Sarnoff, at work, heard this message from 1,400 miles at sea. It said, SS Titanic ran into iceberg, sinking fast. Mr. Sarnoff copied the message, which came from a vessel near the Titanic, a British passenger liner, on its maiden voyage. He replied and asked for details, then notified the press. President Taft ordered other East Coast transmitters off the air to avoid jamming. And for 3 days and nights, the young David Sarnoff stayed in contact with rescue vessels, learning that many people had been saved, but that 1,500 had died at sea. Most ships in the area did not have radio equipment and sailed on, unaware of the sinking. Congress reacted soon after with legislation requiring large vessels to install proper equipment and use it. Soon came the do-it-yourself crystal set craze. Thousands of people were building small, primitive receivers to tune in the crackling code sounds and even occasional music and voices being broadcast from someone's basement or garage. Radio was on its way. In 1915, several years before broadcasting as we know it existed, David Sarnoff wrote a memorandum to the Marconi Company proposing and predicting what he called a radio music box. It should be feasible, he reasoned, to make radio a household utility that would bring clear music into the home. The Marconi Corporation became the Radio Corporation of America in the 20s, and in 1926, the National Broadcasting Company was born. For the first time, millions of people could hear top entertainment by radio, such as Ed Wynn and Eddie Cantor.
The title of tonight's opera is Rosalie. Rosalie is so fat that when she goes to bed, she reminds you of an ocean liner. It takes a couple of tugs to get her out of a slip.
I love to spend each Sunday with you.
Mr. Sarnoff wanted the radio music box to provide more than just entertainment for the family circle. And the news function of radio soon became apparent, as in 1927 when Charles Lindbergh, the talk of the world for his solo plane flight across the Atlantic, arrived back home.
On the evening of the 21st of May last, I arrived at Le Bourget, Paris. The people of Europe requested that I bring back to the people of America one message. You have seen the affection for the people of America demonstrated to you.
The immediacy of radio was, of course, more startling then than it is today. In the 30s, a giant passenger dirigible, the Zeppelin Hindenburg, was landing at Lakehurst, New Jersey. Herbert Morrison was there broadcasting when suddenly it exploded.
The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames.
Get out of the way. Get it started. It's crashing. It's crashing terrible. It's burning and bursting into flames and it's falling on the morning.
Mr. Sarnoff spoke of progress in radio and his hopes at the 1930 dedication of RCA facilities in Camden, New Jersey.
Man covets leisure to experience the emotions that surge through the dramatic arts, to feel the charm and inspiration of music, and in giving to our hours of leisure a higher purpose and a greater worth, radio has the opportunity for its most conspicuous contribution. Its aim is entertainment, education, and instruction of the highest attainable order. Its devices must be the best that can be constructed to achieve that end. With such a mission, there can be no final goal, and for such an industry, no restraining saturation point.
One of David Sarnoff's most important achievements was his part in bringing music, the world's greatest music, to the public. Of course, RCA and other companies had produced phonograph recordings for several years, and radio played them. But that wasn't enough. He wanted to truly make radio the music box of the nation, to bring the concert hall into the home with live performances. He started the drive by presenting famed conductor Walt Damrosch with the Appreciation Hour in 1907. Then came a giant step forward in Mr. Sarnoff's plan to broaden the cultural scope of the new medium. The first complete live opera cast. The series continued radio this day and on Christmas 1931. The Saturday afternoons with Milton J. Cross as commentator became a fixture of America's musical scene. Here's the opening of a typical broadcast from 1937.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Radio Corporation of America has the honor to present this afternoon a performance by the Metropolitan Opera Company of Aida, an opera in four acts by the Italian composer Giuseppe Verdi. This program is transmitted to you directly from the stage of the famous Metropolitan Opera House in New
York. Every great personality of opera was heard across the land. From that same Aida of 1937, the tenor and basso voices of Giovanni Martinelli and Ezio Pinza.
Oh,
Mr. Sarnoff's greatest achievement in realizing radio's cultural potential was the series of concerts by Arturo Toscanini and the NBC Symphony. The acknowledged master conductor at age 70 had retired to his home in Italy. With one bold imaginative stroke, Mr. Sarnoff lured Toscanini back to the podium and the creation for radio of a great new symphony, its 92 members handpicked by the maestro himself. The premiere concert on Christmas night 1937 of the NBC Symphony with Arturo Toscanini was a musical event of transcendent importance.
Christmas greetings from Radio City to listeners throughout the United States and Canada, and to those in other parts of the world who may be listening by shortwave. The National Broadcasting Company is privileged to present the incomparable conductor, Arturo Toscanini, who tonight directs for the first time the National Broadcasting Company Symphony Orchestra in its regular Saturday evening symphony concert. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Toscanini is about to enter the studio, and we shall hear him conduct the Concerto Grosso in D minor by Vivaldi.
Through 17 years on radio and beginning in 1948 on television, the maestro guided the orchestra with a passionate perfectionism which marked his life. And Mr. Sarnoff found that keeping Toscanini required as much diplomacy as getting him. As musical commentator for most of those years, I was privileged to observe Maestro Toscanini's rehearsal temperament in action, ranging from tender cajoling to towering rage. This moment records a baton breaking, one of many.
E passione, dolore, sorrow, passion, enthusiasm, but non sleep. When you play every note, put enthusiasm, like me. I am sorry, I don't enjoy. No, second note, no, no, I hate second note. I hate. You believe that I am crazy? No. It's sensitive, yes.
Repeatedly, Maestro declared to Mr. Sarnoff that he was too old to continue, and repeatedly he returned to new triumphs and new heights. But at age 87, finally, it was time. An all-Wagner program in April 1954 was the last. Here in the Meistersinger Prelude are the last measures Toscanini ever played in public. Through some 200 concerts and the RCA recordings that grew from them, with the unparalleled instrument Mr. Sarnoff had provided, Toscanini set new musical guidelines for our age. Before radio broadcasting had really begun, back in the 20s, David Sarnoff predicted to RCA that the transmission not only of sound but of moving pictures would come into being. That, too, at the time, seemed fantasy to most people. But later, as he rose in the company, he persuaded its directors that RCA engineers must be assigned to the project. And finally, at the 1939 World's Fair in New York, thousands of people saw the beginnings of commercial television. Mr. Sarnoff, then the RCA president, was TV's first commentator as he made the announcement.
And now we add radio sight to sound. It is with a feeling of humbleness that I come to this moment of announcing the birth in this country of a new art so important in its implications that it is bound to affect
all society. It is an art which shines like a torch of hope in a troubled world. It is a creative force which we must learn to utilize to benefit all mankind.
War ushered in the 1980s, and RCA, along with all the other industrial giants, geared up for the war effort. Mr. Sarnoff spearheaded the establishment of the RCA Research Center, later named for him, where hundreds of items of military hardware were created and tested. Mr. Sarnoff had been a colonel in the Army Reserve. He was called to active duty on General Dwight Eisenhower's staff to improve and coordinate radio communications in the European theater. Toward the end of the war, Mr. Sarnoff was promoted to Brigadier General. President Truman awarded him the Medal of Merit, and France presented him the Cross of Commander of the French Legion of Honor. In 1949, he became chairman of the board of RCA. The 50th anniversary of General Sarnoff's association with electronics in 1956 was one of the year's big social events in New York. And there were telegrams of congratulations from President Eisenhower, Vice President Nixon, former President Hoover, Winston Churchill, Bernard Baruch, and Arturo Toscanini. Yeshiva University presented General Sarnoff with the Distinguished Science Award in 1964, and President Johnson filmed a statement that was shown at the award banquet.
General Sarnoff is responsible for major expansions in the horizons of knowledge. He has brought the benefits of science and technology to all the people. He has devoted himself with a singleness of purpose to the advancement of scientific thought and the advancement of scientific talent to national problems. No one better illustrates the genius of America. His rise from immigrant boy to industrial statesman is an inspiring record.
Also in 1964, at another World's Fair in New York, General Sarnoff talked of the global implications of television and its latest improvement developed by RCA, compatible color TV.
In this World's Fair of tomorrow, we have the foreshadowings of the television service of tomorrow. It will be a service to which all nations can contribute and from which all nations can benefit. It can give new meaning to the theme of this great international exposition, peace through understanding. We have added sight to sound, color to sight, and now space to color. There is neither end nor limit to the capacities of this service that began a quarter century ago here in Flushing Meadows.
At the end of 1969, General Sarnoff resigned as chairman of the board and a director of the Radio Corporation of America for health reasons. The last big public event for David Sarnoff was in 1966, when the communications and electronics world paid tribute to his 60 years in the industry. Here is part of a statement recorded for the occasion by President Eisenhower.
I recall your outstanding service to the forces under my command before and during the campaigns in Europe. A great page in the history of freedom was written in those days. Many men would have been content to rest on their laurels, but not you. And the preeminence of our country in electronics and communications has been increasingly the result of your imagination and your sound planning.
Among the speakers at the celebration for General Sarnoff was one of his principal competitors, William Paley, chairman of the board of the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Speaking personally, David, I welcome this happy occasion as a chance to tell you publicly of my high regard, my lasting respect, and my affection.
By to the speeches of praise on that anniversary occasion, he summarized his philosophy and his broad concern for the state of the world.
Through electronics, we have telescoped space and time and conquered isolation.
We have probed the heavens and oceans, connected the continents, manipulated instruments across millions of miles of space, informed and entertained mankind, and stored for instant use vast accumulations of human knowledge. It is my humble prayer that we may march together toward a future that will continue to demand the best in each of us, that will help to better the lot of our fellow man and advance the cause of world peace. Thank you, and God bless you.
David Sarnoff, truly an extraordinary man. This is Ben Grauer.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.